Profile Interview.
17 minutes after 9 o'clock, and my guest is a man who has a very, very inspirational story. It's the story of rising and falling and rising again. He has been very, very successful in the business of the retailing of high-end clothing. Of course, his business has grown over the years. But the story is interesting in the sense that he is not afraid to self-deprecate. He's not afraid to criticize some of his thinking as a younger person, all in aid of us to learn out of that process. His name is Aubrey Tweny. I didn't invite him because his name is also Aubrey. I invited him because his story is absolutely inspirational. He is the owner of the Aubriani brand. For the longest time, I thought that Aubriani was Italian. Can't you know? It's a great man from Mabopane. Let me introduce him as we have this conversation. Aubrey Tweny is my guest. But Aubrey, good evening to you. So honored to have you on the show.
I'm honored myself. Thank you for the invite. Thank you very much for the invitation.
Much appreciated, bro. Aubs. I want to go back to how your business started, the Aubriani brand, the high-end sort of clothing ranges that have been associated with you and the brand that you own. Where did all of that start, Brobs?
Aubrey,
Thank you
for the in 1986, I had been working for a company in Pretoria.
Yeah.
And I had been working there for 5 years as a young person. I had just gotten married. But my employer at the time had so much confidence in me that he had taken me overseas for, you know, onto fashion shows and international menswear fairs. So, yes, the exposure was quite immense. And when the consumer boycotts and the stayaways were intensifying, you should remember 1986, we had all these, you know, stayaways and the political uprisings. So my boss decided that he was going to close shop.
Yeah.
He had a company, and there were about 13 stores that he owned around. And I was managing one of the stores. So mine was the first to go. He retrenched me because, well, in your previous conversation just now, you're talking about perceptions. Maybe first, I was a black manager at the time, and this is 1986, San Victoria.
Yeah.
But I took all that experience with me. When he retrenched me, a friend of mine, a gentleman by the name of Brasset Pallas.
Yeah.
Very senior person and executive at BMW at the time. He saw me cracking down and he said, no, don't worry, don't you cry here. What I'm going to do is I'm going to form a partnership with you and I'm going to open a business. You are going to use the same experience that got you to where you are. So he got us to open a store in Harankua. I'm from Atteville, by the way. I heard you introduce me as
Mabopane. It's not Mabopane, it's Atteville.
Yeah,
you know what? Now I get the love of the Lekker Jewish. I always found my Ashma are top as far as that is concerned. Ah, now I get it. Okay, I understand, bro. Yeah.
So well, yes, I was living in Harangua at the time. So that's how I met Brasset, and we became family friends and opened the business together with two other partners. So there were four of us, and we opened St. Aubrey. That was our first clothing shop in Karankua. But a year later, I decided to go on my own, and I broke away from the company and from the partners, from the group.
Yeah.
That's when myself and my wife decided to start Aubriani, which is a combination of our names. My name is Aubrey and her name is Vinnie. So that's where it comes from. Obviously, with the influence from this Italian to eat. But yes, coming to your question of getting all the upmarket clothing and brands and stuff, yeah, it comes from all the experience, the international travel and the flair, as you may put.
Most definitely. I mean, and it's still very, very evident, Bra Obs. I mean, I watch how you dress, how you present yourself, and that flair is still very, very evident, even in your own personal expression. The question I wanted to ask was why the high or the top market of clothing? How did you see that? Because many people would have argued that you're in a market where people are generally poor. You are going to sell upmarket clothing. Some would call expensive clothing in a township where people are, you know, trying to just put food on their table. How did you get to see that that would be a successful business?
Upmarket is a niche, probably. Upmarket, that sector is less contested. People and then serviced. And, you know, yes, I do understand that there has always been the gap for, you know, those that have and those that are less fortunate, etc. But having worked in the upmarket sector from the one, I mean, in the company that I worked, we were competing with the best. We were importing clothing even those years ago. So yeah. I got used to that market, and it has always been there. I don't know if it's a coincidence or choice, but upmarket is just where, you know, there is consistency. There is consistency, and yes, people can be going through whatever they're going through, but you still see those vehicles on the road. You still see people living in estates. You know, those people need to be serviced.
You know, somebody made the observation looking at the numbers that the luxury brands, particularly over the COVID-19 period, you know, the luxury brands from organizations such as Montblanc, Pierre Cardin, all of these luxury brands, Louis Vuitton, over this time, this 20 months of COVID, when every other business was experiencing untold hardship, there was an upward trajectory for those kinds of businesses. The businesses in the beauty industry, for example, there was an upward trajectory for those kinds of businesses. And that for me is quite interesting, because it may even look counterproductive, but you're saying to me that it's a niche, it's a small group of people that, because of, I suppose, macro economic ideas, we tend to neglect, but they are a very underserviced niche.
Yes, and they have the resources. Those are people who have the money to dispose of. Those are the people who have money to spend, and we cannot really pretend that they don't exist.
Yeah.
And those are the people who are still traveling right now to countries that are welcoming vaccinated visitors and stuff. There are people who are still going overseas on holiday during times like this.
Yeah.
People with money, it has to be said, there are people who have money and who are going to continue spending it. And we are there to service those people.
And the I don't know, was it deliberate, the Italian sort of connection to your brand, Obriani? I got to tell you, Bra Obs, for years, I thought Obriani was an Italian brand. It was a foreign brand. It was a brand that was, as you say, niche, but it was most definitely an Italian brand. What's the connection to that?
It's nothing. It was not even crafted. It's my name, which is Aubrey.
Yeah.
But then you are yourself with an A-U-B-R-E-Y. But I took my Aubrey to make it an O-B-R-I.
Yeah.
And my wife being Vinny, her name is Vinny. So, yeah, that's Obriani. Her name is the N-I at the back. It's just a combination of two names, authentically South African and very much original from here. It's got an Armani touch to it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's most definitely that Armani sort of feeling to it. And the flair is most definitely Italian. I mean, I watch how you dress. There's a Mashrabana sort of Italian flair to it. Is that deliberate?
Well, yeah, the influence obviously is from the extensive traveling and exposure. You know, it just becomes such a habit that you, I don't know, I think it becomes the territory, Obs.
Yeah. But Obs, you speak of your wife, Ozvini, and how she appears even in the name of the brand which you co-own. And the story of Obrichweu is not just the story of Obrichweu, it's the story of Obrichweu and Vinichweu. One of the things that has inspired me about your relationship with your wife is the way that you run your business together as a family. And of course, now with your children, Tiamo and Tabang, also very strongly involved in the business. That family involvement, that co-ownership, that co-decision making, could I argue that is not very usual, particularly in our community? Most of the time, it's the guy, he owns everything, he makes all of the decisions and everybody follows. Yours has been very, very unique and novel in the sense that it has become a well-known thing, particularly in our side of the world, the Pretoria side of the world, that Obrichweu and his wife run the business together. It's been the case since the beginning. The rise and fall of the Obrichweu brand and the re-rise of the Obrichweu brand has always been about Obrichweu and Ozvini. Where does that come from? I mean, as a black man, I find that quite interesting, because most of the time, you know, we, the men, make the decisions and the women must follow.
Okay. In our case, what happened, Aubrey, is we met when we were 14 years of age, and that's quite a tender age. We were babies. We met at boarding school, and 4 years later, we were parents already with Tabang.
Yes.
We've been together all those years, and we shared the same kind of dreams. We got married at 27, and we moved to Harankua. Now, how we got to work together is that Vinnie used to work for Standard Bank, and I was working for this clothing company.
Yes.
But when I decided to open Obrichweu, she left the bank to come and join me. So. Yeah. We started the business together in 1987. We made mistakes together. We fumbled together. We saw ourselves being reckless and going through bankruptcy together. And all those things became a shared responsibility. We just became entangled in one project. And business became our life, basically.
Yeah.
We've never done anything differently to each other. We've always been in business, especially the clothing business.
Yeah.
But then again, when our business went through problems, I mean, 5 years after we had started, in 1992, you know, we started getting into problems, and we were reckless with money, as you can, I mean, I've told myself so many times. And I've spoken about how reckless we became, not out of foolishness, but out of being young and being reckless and being inexperienced. Suddenly, we're starting to have money. We built a big, beautiful house in Midrand. We started buying cars. And, yeah, all of that was creditors' money. And when we lost that, we had to regroup again. And, yeah, that's how the bond continued to become stronger and stronger, and our goal became to work ourselves out of that quagmire.
Yeah. Had you and Ozvini come from business families, or was this something that started with the two of you?
She was raised in a business family. I mean, her parents were prominent business people in Edgefield.
Yeah.
And remember, Vinny's a graduate. And for a graduate, and Vinny is a graduate. Now, when we got devastated by the demise of our business, father offered us like 20 square meter little space at this place in Ettrichville.
Yeah.
And next to Ettrichville station, no, Swordsville station, there's a huge shopping center there. Mashile, it's called Mashile.
I know Mashile's shopping center. Yes.
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 That's my in-laws shopping center.
Right.
And my father-in-law said, you know what, there's nothing I can do for you guys, but here's a 20, just a small little corner shop.
Yeah.
He gave us that, and yeah, Vinnie started, she grew up working in the cafe because, I mean, as a student, during the holidays, she'd go and sell pap and flakes. She used to climb on top of a crate and sell to people. She was quite young, and she grew up in a clothing.
How does a clever like you, Braobs, tame a tigress like Uzvini? I mean, here she is coming from a powerful family like that. How did you get to disarm her, Braobs?
Disarm her, as in?
I'm very aware of the social dynamics, Tsakukasi, for example.
Okay.
It's very difficult for a guy who doesn't have the kinds of credentials that would be understood to be commensurate or at the same level of a young woman whose family is better healed, more educated, degreed, and all of those kinds of things. And he's a clever, but Jewish like.
No.
Yeah.
I come from a family of academics. So, I mean, my whole parents, from my grandparents, they were teachers.
Yeah.
And by our standards, you know, that's quite a.
Sure.
A great credential.
Yeah.
But now, yes, you ask a very good question. The fact Vinnie went continue to go to school and then, continue to go to university.
Yeah.
And I stayed behind and I started I found a job.
Yeah.
Now, that to me was one of the biggest inspirations. I thought to myself, this woman is going to become my wife. And I'm going to have to make sure that I don't compete with the other graduates she might meet in her life and stuff like that. I'm going to make sure that I'm the man, you know. I decided.
Egmont Scheldmark.
Yeah. Now, honestly, I didn't see that discrepancy as a weakness.
Yeah.
It actually fueled my confidence. It fueled my confidence to make sure that I'm not less. I'm not inferior. I had a lot of people to compete with. My buddies. Remember,
yeah, yeah.
I didn't go through to varsity, but most of my brass, I mean, all those guys from Mamelodi or Shark, Lebo, Agri, Lebo, City, Montana.
Yeah.
Those were my friends.
Yes.
And most of my friends are executives, graduates, and the business magnates and stuff like that. And I've never really looked at my position, my credentials as you know, as a minus or as a weakness, as a disadvantage.
Yes, yes. But Obs, one of the things that I've sort of noticed about you and the way that you articulate your evolution mm-hmm. is that you've never been afraid to speak of the negative things that happened in your life. So, for example, you speak of the fact that due to your inexperience and perhaps youthful inexperience, you guys used money from creditors, which is, quite frankly, a very, very sadly and very usual thing amongst entrepreneurs, that as soon as lines of credit become stronger, you start believing that you're rich, when in fact it is the business's money that we're still talking about. I remember you talking about that at some point.
Yes.
You seem to have a very self-deprecating attitude about yourself without not acknowledging your successes. You acknowledge your successes, but it almost sounds as if you keep yourself sober by not being afraid to speak about your failures. Explain that dynamic to me.
That, caught honesty, Aubrey.
Yeah.
And honesty is the only way you're going to be able to cope with whatever circumstance, whatever situation you face. Because unless you are honest, you're going to be in denial, you're going to be dishonest, you're going to lose sight of what happened. You're going to start trying to pass blame to other people or other factors. Now, the good thing about me and my issues is when there's a problem, we know that we have to own up and face the problem and acknowledge what caused it, how we got there.
Where did that come? Where does that come from? Where does that come from? I ask this because very often, especially in people from our community, we find reasons to blame apartheid, or we find, not that apartheid was not to blame, but the headline reason for our failures, sometimes failures that were created by our own lack of discipline or whatever, we attribute that to something external to us. We'll say that it was the apartheid system, or it was my uncle, or it was a bad upbringing. We never take ownership like you seem to do. I mean, I've read many of your blogs, and the theme in the way that you address issues is, to what extent was this situation created by me? Where does that come from? Was it something that you learned from home? Did somebody teach you that?
It's a reality to face, to come face to face with, Aubrey. When our business fell, when we closed down and whatever happened, we knew what it was. We knew that we were overcommitted. We knew we made the mistakes. We had a house that we built, which was probably above our, you know, we knew that we had...
It was above your means, yeah.
Yes. But then again, we had to identify those things. We had to look at those things and really unpack the situation and look at what went wrong, confront what went wrong, and correct it. Because had we denied, had we been in denial, we would have lost sight of the solution. Well, had we been in denial, we would have found someone to blame. We would have, yeah, you're right, we would have, you know, blamed so many other factors except ourselves. And it's honesty. Even in personal relationships, a problem you sit with is a consequence of some action. Nothing comes from the roof and falls onto your lap.
Yeah.
We know why we're where we are, you know?
And most of the time, even in situations where it would be reasonable to blame circumstances beyond or outside of yourselves, you and Uzvini, you seem to always bring it to yourself. You always seem to say, but at what level, at which point am I liable for this situation? I'm interested in understanding where that comes from. Is it something that is teachable? Is it something that is learnable? I was having a conversation over the week with the listeners about a practice that I've adopted in my home in aid of trying to develop in my children that kind of value system that says, how do I take responsibility? How do I say I'm responsible for my life? Yes, there may be circumstances around me that may push me in certain directions, but I'm still the captain of my ship. I'm still the one who chooses whether to cry or to soldier on. I'm still the one, even in the face of victimization, I'm still the one who chooses how to interpret that situation. So there's a specific, way I've decided with my wife to deal with that so that we can inculcate that kind of value system in our children. Where did it come from for you and Uzvini? Where did it come from to say, I'm responsible? I remember that you had 8 shops across 2 provinces by then, which is huge. You lost 4 until you lost all of them and you went back to work. You lost your cars. You lost your all sorts of things. You went back to using public transport, the mockery from friends and colleagues and all of those kinds of things. I mean, you had so much room to say, no, I see this was apartheid or whatever. But you said, no, it was us. Where does that thing come from?
Aubrey, I don't know. It's nothing scientific. I don't know if you can say something that we worked on. I think it was just such a natural reaction to disaster. I mean, our situation needed confronting. And there was no way, we had no time to blame people. We had no time to look back and blame anyone, because it was either, we were faced with either, you know, a demise, we may have to have gone back to the township or to live with our parents, or we had to really swim. We had to maintain our lifestyle. We had to stay where we stayed, keep the kids in school, pay for our home. We lost everything else, but we made sure that our kids stay in school and we pay for our house. So there was really no time to blame anyone. It was not going to be of any benefit to us.
Talk to me about the nature of the problems. I mean, Bro Obs, you'll be able to curate as to what is appropriate to reveal on a conversation like this. But talk to me about the nature of the issues that that resulted in the loss of 8 very successful stores that were selling a very, very high niche brand. In fact, I've just received a message from a very good friend of the show, Elisma, who says, wow, I've just Googled Obriani. That lady's dresses are beautiful. Suddenly I feel proudly South African all over. Thanks, sir, for flying the South African flag high. What was the nature? I mean, again, you'll be able to decide how you did. But what was the nature of the reasons for the loss of those businesses?
You see, before South Africa, the landscape, the manufacturing landscape, our suppliers and stuff in this country, nobody gives you anything without offering you credit.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter whether you have money in your hands, but they wanted to open an account and give you terms, 60 to 90 days to pay off stuff. Now, that was just a standard. Before 1994, nobody traveled. We didn't go overseas to import stuff. We were buying from Polo here, from Jonathan D., House of Monetti. We were buying from South African suppliers.
Yeah.
They gave us credit. Now, when you lose that, when you mess up and they take away their facility, then it means you're going from hand to mouth. A lot of our demise came from not being able to purchase or not being able to go back to the same suppliers.
Cash flow.
And then are you with me?
I'm with you, Brobs, yeah?
Yes. Now, when you don't have credit, and remember, this is pre-1994, where even banks don't lend, you know? There were very limited resources. The only bank at the time which was able to extend some loans to us was the African Bank.
Yes.
And we struggled. I mean, cash flow was a problem.
Yeah.
But whenever we, remember, even we ourselves didn't extend credit to our customers. So our customers were paying cash and we were misusing the cash, because this is cash now which is in your account, but then it's not actually yours. It belongs to the creditors.
Sure.
Now, this is one of the problems that had the major problem is that's what we did wrong. We started spending money which wasn't ours. That money wasn't ours.
Yeah.
And this is what led to our bankruptcy and, yeah, to the misery.
One of the things that I lament as I look back on our history as a community is how businesses rose and fell for the reasons that you've just outlined. Many, many great entrepreneurs great entrepreneurs that came from the townships and so forth, who for that very same reason rose to wonderful heights. In other words, I'm suggesting to you that before the BEE story, before entrepreneurs became rich because of a tender, but because of hard work, because of slogging it out like you and Osvini did, how we've lost that legacy of business person in South Africa, particularly black business person. Talk to me about that. Talk to me about the fact that at some point there was a rise in black business, particularly, throughout South Africa. And then there was a stoppage of that. Somewhere along the line that stopped. Talk to me about what your interpretation of that is.
My interpretation of which transaction?
In other words, the transition. Okay, I make the distinction between the kinds of business people that you, Bonda de Maponya. I'm talking about the, and I'll say it, the non-BEE tenderpreneurs, right? I'm talking about the guys that went out and sold their wares, went house to house, sold their wares, whatever house to house means. Versus the politically connected guy who is now called a business because he won a tender because he's got a friend somewhere. There was that cohort of business people, particularly in the township. They've disappeared. They've disappeared, Bra Obs. What happened? Why did that happen?
I'm not sure about those who disappeared. Maybe they didn't. They were not able to resuscitate it because of age, or maybe they just outgrew the desire to be in business. But those of us who did, those of us who endured the ride.
And there are few and far between of you. There's very few of you guys now.
Yes, it took bruises for us to get this educated, Aubrey. What falling did to us, it taught us not to fall again. It taught us not to borrow again. It taught us to rely on, to save. It taught us to be really cautious with money, to be careful and to be stringent. I mean, we were taught to respect money. Unlike in the past generation, when we, in our previous life, if I should put it like that, if I may put it like that, used to spend money as if it was going to be coming through all the time. Mm. But after having gone down and realizing that money is perishable, money doesn't like to be captured and to be active, we started to take care of money. And until that is managed, until that is properly managed by entrepreneurs, young and old, I see the trends that are happening now. Even the so-called tender premiers, whatever, the way they use money, there's so much you can do with money, but there is a very huge, there's a big level, a high level of extravagance.
Yeah.
And extravagance is imprudent. Extravagance, people who are really not aware of what's going to happen in future. Money doesn't have to be disrespected because it walks away. Money. Now, we have learned the hard way, Aubrey, and I can tell you, if there's another storm, if there were another storm to come around and hit us the same way, we wouldn't allow it. It wouldn't be as devastating because we are well prepared. We were taught to be disciplined, and not taught by anybody. We were just taught by circumstances.
And I would imagine, Bra Obs, by circumstances, but by the interpretation of those circumstances. Because, yeah. As I say, that there were many other business people that emerged that were hit by similar realities that brought your demise, that didn't make the decisions that you made, that didn't learn from the realities that you faced, that didn't have the grit and the staying power to deal with the lessons of humiliation and all of those kinds of things. And that's why you still remain. And that's why your story is so important for me, Brobs. It's so important for me because it can be done. We can break the cycle of poverty if we are willing to take up certain disciplines. Would you agree with that, Brobs?
I do, absolutely. I do agree with you, Aubrey. That's exactly what happens. You're right.
You see, what I argue that I'm a big proponent of economic freedom in our lifetime.
Okay.
And I believe that there are certain things that we are not being told, that we are not learning, that we are not being educated. And it is the lessons that you have learned that are going to bring us to a place of economic freedom in our lifetime. Sure,
yeah.
We can fight, we can do all of those other nice things. But unless we understand the principles that have made you the businessman, the family man which you are, then we cannot hope but to continue to struggle for another 400 years. And it is that story, the story of grit, the story of understanding the lessons of falling, the lessons of failure, that you have learned so powerfully and that you keep teaching about. Are people listening, you think?
Failure is not the end of the road, Aubrey. Failure is, we don't have business schools in this, we don't have business schools pre-tertiary. Even business schools, these are graduate schools of business, that we go to, into GBS at UCT and stuff like that. Now, we don't have those. We have to learn business. The business itself is working in progress. Business teaches business itself. We learn on the job. Now, when we fail, shouldn't suggest that we are failures. It is just something that needs to be repeated and corrected.
Yeah.
Failing doesn't mean you have to start hopping from what you're doing now out of retail into farming, from farming to mining and stuff, because you're not going to master much of any the more you do that.
Yeah. Obriani, well,
in my case, we had to correct and re-correct until you get something right.
Yeah. Obriani has grown in leaps and bounds. The product offering of the brand Obriani has grown. Your daughter Tsiamo has added the female flair into the business. Your son Tabang is doing great things also in the bringing in of more youthful, product in your product line. Your business continues to grow in leaps and bounds, Braobs. What is the plan? What is the ultimate plan for Obriani Creations?
Aubrey, being a family, we cannot overextend ourselves. We have a capacity we can only expand within reasonable bounds. We have dreams, yes, we have plans. There are plans that we have, but they must be manageable plans. We are not young anymore, myself and Osvin. Mm. And going forward, we have plans of, Kiam is opening a shop in PE as we speak. I think 1st of November or in the next few weeks, she'll be opening a shop in Gebeha. She's always also going to be called Obriani. She's going to trade under our name, but there is her own shop, which is she's putting together herself. And we are just, it's a business that we're managing while we're here. And I'm not sure about future plans at the moment because it means, I don't know.
Yeah, I hear you. It's that prudent caution coming out, Braobs, and I appreciate that. I appreciate your sobriety, Braobs. I appreciate the fact that you teach reality. You don't sell us fantasy. But as you teach us all of these things, you're saying that it's possible. It's possible. I love that message.
Yeah, no, it is possible. And honestly, Aubrey, if we had forever to live, we'd do so much more.
Yeah.
Because challenges are just exciting. Obstacles are exciting, especially when you defeat adversity. That gives you such a high. When you've got a problem and you solve it.
Yeah.
Especially when you solve it as a team, when you solve it with your partners, with your family, whatever. That's a thrill. That is a thrill, Robs.
Probs, we've run out of time. I could speak to you for hours and hours. Can you believe it? We've been talking for an hour, right? Winnie M on Twitter says, I'm listening to Obudi Obs, and what a teacher to some of us. We engage with him on Facebook, and he always finds a way to share important elements of business with us freely. He loves his wife and family dearly. Such an honest man. I respect him. Braobs, I respect you. I want to thank you very much for agreeing to talk to me. I thank you for your kind messages when I was sick. I didn't even know that you even knew me. But I want to thank you very much for your kind and encouraging messages when I was very, very sick. And your words were very, very instrumental in me saying this is a challenge that we need to overcome. Thank you very much for continuing to be a beacon of light for our community. And I hope that Obriani grows in leaps and bounds. I know that your daughter and your son are next in line, I suppose, in the running of the business. And they've got some great ideas. But I want to thank you also for your relationship with Osvini, who continues to be an anchor, not only for the Obriani brand, but for us as a community. I want to thank you for all of the work that you are doing. And long may you continue to be successful.